So last week, we kind of jumped into the Sermon on the Mount, and we talked about how as followers of Jesus, all of us are called to be missionaries in our circles of influence. And we talked about how the Sermon on the Mount kind of begins with Jesus kind of explaining to those who were there the results of what he would do through his work on the cross. And then the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, from verse 13 all the way through the end of chapter 7, speaks about how we are to live as followers of Christ. And what I want to do this morning, and the sermon that will follow up this one, is look at the end of Matthew chapter 6. Because Jesus, at the end of Matthew chapter 6, answers the question for us, how are we to engage the world? And the concept of the world that is speaking about here in Matthew 6 and throughout the scriptures is really the whole of who we are, or the whole of life here on earth. And so all the things that encompass our life here on earth, from the physical things to people to relationships, our houses, everything, that's kind of the world as a whole. And so Jesus is going to ask this question, or answer the question, how do we engage the world? And what we're going to see this morning and the next time that we come together in Matthew 6 is that Jesus is going to deal with two different temptations that we often have as we engage with the world. The first temptation, which we're going to look at this morning, is the temptation to love the world. It's that temptation to see the things around us, like our house, like our relationships, like our cars, like our money, and everything that we have around us, and to really just love those things above everything else. So Jesus is going to answer the question, how do we deal with the temptation to love the world, as we look at Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 24 this morning. And then the second temptation that Jesus is going to deal with when we come back together in Matthew 6 is he's going to deal with the temptation to be overwhelmed by anxiety in the world. So there's a temptation to kind of love the world, and then there's a temptation to be overwhelmed by the anxiety of the world. And Jesus is going to talk about that, and we'll talk about that when we gather together again in Matthew chapter 6. And so the theme for us this morning is, how do we engage the world in light of the temptation to love the world? And in these four verses or so that we look at this morning, verse 19 through verse 21, three verses, what we see is that Jesus gives one command that's kind of twofold. There's a positive element to the command, there's a negative element to the command. He commands us not to do something, and he commands us instead to do something else. And so the negative command that we're going to see is, he says, look, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. And the positive command is, but instead lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And my hope and my desire for us this morning is that we can obey this command because we understand that Christ is for us, so that we do not need to live for ourselves. In other words, our understanding that Christ is for us, that we do not need to live for ourselves, leads us to be able to joyfully not lay up our treasures here on earth, but instead to lay up our treasures in heaven. So let's look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. It says this, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth, rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. So let's look at the first command, the negative command, to not lay up our treasures here on earth. How do we not lay up our treasures here on earth? Well, the first thing we have to do is to figure out what are our treasures. And the way that we figure out what our treasures are is we identify them, right? And so I've got a couple questions that can kind of help us identify our treasures. So as I ask these questions, I want to encourage you to think about them, answering them in your head. The first question is simply, what gives your life meaning? So if you want to identify what you treasure, ask yourself the question, what gives your life meaning? There's a couple questions you can ask as you think about that. One of the things is, look at your life. Where do you find yourself investing your time, your energy, your money, your resources? Because we tend to invest our money, our time, our energy, our resources into the things that most matter to us. And we tend to look at the things that most matter to us to us tend to point us to what gives us meaning, what's important to us, what we treasure. Or another way to ask that question as you're trying to figure out what gives your life meaning is to ask the question, what are the things that can make you angry or sad or can make you extremely happy depending on the outcome? One of the things for me that I've noticed is that the thing that can make me angry in an instant is if I'm embarrassed. If something embarrasses me or if you embarrass me, my natural drive instantaneously is I get angry. Why? Well, you look at, okay, because there's something here, right? Because I'm finding in some sense my identity, my meaning in what others think of me. And so by taking away or by embarrassing me and that affects what others think of me, I'm getting angry. And so that's something that I find myself treasuring, something that I find myself kind of putting my hope in. So you can ask yourself the question, man, what are the things that make you angry or sad in an instant, or they make you just overjoyed and happy in an instant because things go the way that you wanted them to go? That's something that you treasure. Or to go even further, what is the thing that if taken away, you would have no reason to live? What's the thing that gives you the reason to live? And that's something that you treasure. That's something that gives your life meaning. And if as you're thinking through these things, you're going to yourself and going, man, I don't really see anything in my life where it's like, you know, that's the thing that gives my life meaning in a negative way. I'd encourage you to talk to somebody who knows you well. So like your spouse, or this is even harder, talk to your kids because they oftentimes can tell you right away what it is. Or somebody who knows you well. And they'll be able to help you and say, yeah, I see that, man, this is something that you find great meaning in and you've tied your identity to. Another question that you can ask as you're trying to identify your treasure is what is it that gives you satisfaction? What is it that you look at and go, man, if I have this, my life is complete? Or you look at it and go, my life isn't complete because I don't have this. Those are the things that you treasure. And so as you're answering these questions, my guess is that you're beginning to kind of get a picture of whether it's relationships or money or your job or your house or other people's opinions of you, which is one of the things that I struggle with. Those things are beginning to kind of clearly pop up. And those are the things that you are probably finding yourself drawn towards or treasuring. And the next thing we do is we try to identify what we are laying up as treasures on earth is to identify whether our satisfaction in this life is coming from things that belong to this world only or things that don't belong to this world. In other words, is at the root of our satisfaction and our joy, is it tied to things that simply belong to this world that do not go with us into the next life, where if we've trusted Jesus, we spend eternity with God in heaven, or if we've not trusted Christ, we spend eternity separated from God in hell? Are the things that we find our ultimate meaning and satisfaction things that we can't take with us, or things that we can take with us? And at the root of laying our treasures here on earth is the belief that you and I can meet the soul-satisfying desires that we have apart from God. Because we lay up our treasures on earth because we believe that in laying up our treasures on earth, that's where we will find our satisfaction, that's where we will find our joy, that's where we will find our security. And Jesus makes the argument in verse 19 as to why we shouldn't do it. And it's not the only reason, but he makes a simple argument in verse 19. He says, look, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Why? Because that's where moth and rust destroy and where thieves can break in and steal. Now, how many of you remember your first car? Oh, yeah. I remember my first car. It was in 2002. I grew up in Japan and then went to boarding school in high school and then went to college in Chicago. So I didn't need a car till I'd graduated college. And so I remember, I think as a 22-year-old, getting my first car in 2002. It was a 1995 Toyota Corolla stick shift, which is great for showing off to the ladies, making your tires squeal. It's awesome. And the little e-brake. I got to take that back because I just realized that we had bought that car. We were already engaged at that point in time. So I wasn't showing off to the ladies. I was just showing off to Amanda, but she was not impressed in any way. But that's besides the point. But this car had the stick shift, it had the e-brake, and then it had a sunroof. And for those of you who don't know, a sunroof is like a moonroof is a bad idea. A sunroof is like the stepbrother bad idea of the moonroof. Essentially, the only thing it can do is prop up about an inch and a half. It does nothing else. And so it had an aftermarket sunroof in it and aftermarket alloy wheels. And I remember the night that I bought this car, driving it home. I bought it in Ohio because I was living in Ohio at the time, and driving it at night, and just, you know, the dash was just lit up, and I thought, man, this is just it had a tape deck as well, no CD, just the coolest thing ever. And thinking to myself, like, I am going to just, you know, keep this car so nice and clean and shiny, and this is the most amazing thing ever. This is my first car. And then as the years went by, rust began to appear. The sunroof started to leak, so much so that I had to put roofing tar around it and bolt it shut with a bar to keep it from flapping open. The bumper at some point in time detached. The hood actually flew off the car twice going down I-275. And it got to a place where I remember about 3 or 4 years ago, I was almost 20 years old, the brakes stopped working. And so they worked for a while. I would just fill up more brake fluid, and then it would work for, you know, about, you know, at first it worked for like a week, and then you had to put more brake fluid in, and then it worked for a day, and then it was like, I put the brake fluid in. I remember in Ann Arbor and walking out, going out of the gas station and hitting the brakes, and the brake fluid just, like, it was gone within a mile or two. And so I took it to the mechanic, and as I asked the mechanic, I said, well, this is what's going on. I asked you to fix it. He then calls me back, has me come back to the shop, and he goes, look, so your brakes are not working because the lines are rusted and deteriorated. In fact, they're just destroyed. They're disintegrated. But here's the thing. I'm not going to fix your brake lines because your vehicle is too dangerous to drive, not only for yourself, but those around you. It started to, basically, the frame has started to separate from the struts. And so I'm not going to fix this as a service to my community. I'm not going to fix your vehicle. That's what he said. And so, you know, I ended up having to, you know, take this, like, limp the car to the junkyard for scrap. And here's the thing, right? So no matter how new our vehicle is today, and no matter how much we think that this vehicle that is just, you know, awesome and beautiful, no matter how new it is today, a time will come when your vehicle will face the same thing that my vehicle faced. Why? Because here on earth, rust and moth come in and destroy things. Because nothing lasts forever. And so the argument that Jesus is making and saying, look, don't lay up for your treasures here on earth, is simply because anything that you invest here on earth is temporary. It doesn't last forever. And so don't pour your treasures there, but instead pour your treasures in heaven. Lay them up in heaven. Now, what does it mean for us to lay our treasures in heaven? What is that talking about? Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 through 19. Because in this passage, Paul talks to us and speaks specifically about what it means to lay up our treasures in heaven in terms of money, but he also gives us a pattern for how that works, not just in money, but within our resources and our time, our energy, the way we interact with others around us. So look at 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 17, it says this, "As for the rich in this present age," and I would argue most, if not all of us, fall into this category when we look at kind of the rest, especially when we look at the rest of the world. "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty," and haughty simply means to be prideful. "Don't be prideful, nor set your hope on the uncertainty of riches." Laying our treasures here on earth is setting our hope on things that are uncertain, such as our riches. It says, don't do that. But instead, what? On God. And so the first element of laying our treasures in heaven rather than laying them on earth is to understand that we set our hope not on things on earth that are temporary, such as our relationships, our money, our job, what others think of us, but instead set your hope on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. Now, why does God provide things for us? This isn't a trick question in that verse. To do what? To enjoy those things. And so there's an element, too, where the idea here isn't, hey, you all need to take go into a monastery and give up everything and live a life of, you know, having no desires or, you know, basically kind of, you know, just getting rid, you know, disavowing all wealth. It's not what Jesus is saying. That's not what Paul is saying, right? He's saying, look, what we have, for those of you who are wealthy, what you have is a gift from God, but don't set your hope on it, but instead set your hope on God. And at the same time, understand that God is the one who richly provided for everything that you do have, which should bring some humility to those to those who have more wealth than others, rather than our tendency is to look and say, hey, look how good I am and how hard I work compared to your laziness. You know, that doesn't always apply, but to a degree, there's an element where that's oftentimes the view of those who have a lot versus those who have little, the way they view them. But Jesus said, but Paul says here, look, no, you understand everything that you have has been richly provided for you by God, and it's for you to enjoy. It's a good thing, but it's not your hope. So we enjoy it, but it's not our hope, right? Whereas when the treasures on earth are things that we might enjoy, but also what do? We put our hope in them. He goes on, verse 18, but they are to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous and ready to share. And so you lay up for your treasures in heaven by enjoying what God has given you, but also understanding that what you have is not what you place your hope in, and instead what you have is used to do good to others and to be generous and to be ready to share. Verse 19, thus what? Storing up treasures for themselves as a good foundation for their future, so that they may take a hold of that which is truly life. So the argument that Paul is making, which corresponds back to what Jesus calls us to in laying up our treasures in heaven, is the idea and understanding that what God has given us, our time, our energy, our resources, our money, we view them not as a thing in which we find our hope in which we find our security in, because that's laying your treasures here on earth. And when you do that, what happens? You are always disappointed because you will never have enough. And the moment that you lose the thing that you put your hope in, you're going to either get angry or absolutely crushed and depressed. But he says, no, instead you look at your energy, your time, your money, your resources, and you lay them up as treasures in heaven in which you are generous with them, and you're generous with them for the sake of an eternal investment. Now, how can we have physical things create an eternal investment? How does that work? How can our physical things have eternal implications? This is the cool part. The way that physical, temporal things have eternal implications is that God uses our time, our energy, our resources, and our money to do what? To point people to Jesus. And so when you give your money to Anchor, right? That's laying up your treasures in heaven, because what you're doing is your money is allowing Anchor to have a gospel presence in this community so that people can hear Jesus, and so that God can rescue people, and so that a day will come when we're in heaven celebrating Jesus with other people who heard about Jesus through Anchor because of our investment in Anchor. When you invest your time and energy in serving at Anchor, it has a direct implication in laying up your treasures in heaven, because what it's doing is that you're allowing Anchor to have a gospel presence in our community. So that one day, when we are in heaven celebrating Jesus and his goodness for all of eternity, we're doing so with those who God graciously used Anchor to call to himself. And so your temporal money and energy and resources that you invested in Anchor and in the local church has an eternal ramification that goes far beyond the money itself, or the time or the energy, which is all temporal. When you relationally invest in your neighbors by being on mission with Anchor, by pointing your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers to Jesus and inviting them into your life, what you're doing is you're allowing Anchor to have a gospel presence in this community. And that then allows us so that by God's grace, one day when we are celebrating Jesus in heaven, we're doing so with those who God graciously used, or with those who God used us to point to Jesus, so that your neighbors are in heaven celebrating Jesus with you. That's what this is about. But the thing is that we are not going to be able to store up our treasures in heaven where moth and rust cannot destroy because it's eternal. We're not going to be able to do that if we don't come back to 1 Timothy and understand that our hope doesn't rest in these temporal things. We're not going to be able to invest in laying up our treasures in heaven unless we understand that not only does our hope cannot rest in things here on earth because that will disappoint, but also until we begin to understand that because Christ is for us, we do not need to live for ourselves. Because who is the most generous person? The most generous person is Jesus Christ, right? Jesus Christ, who, what does Jesus Christ do? It says he laid his life down for us. He sacrificed himself for us so that we might be rescued. And so when the Bible talks about generosity in 1 Corinthians 9, it talks about, it doesn't just say, hey, you need to be more generous, you need to give more of your time, your energy, your money, your resources. It doesn't say that. He says, you need to be generous, but why? You need to be generous because Jesus, who is generous towards you and giving up his life for you, calls you to generosity. So how do we lay up our treasures in heaven? Practically, there's two things that we can do. The first thing is that we recognize that we are sojourners. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 through 11. Now, a sojourner is somebody who is walking through a land. And so they're not a citizen of the land, and they're simply passing through. So for me, growing up in Japan, I was a sojourner in Japan. In that, this was not going to be, it could have been, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to be my ultimate home. I was passing through. And Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 9, he says this, "But you, those of you who trusted Jesus as a rescuer, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." Let me just stop here for a minute. What this is simply saying is that we are Jesus' treasure. That we are those who were not a people, who were not anything distinct or special, and Jesus chose us as his treasure and rescued us into his family so that we could be a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people of his own possession. Therefore, verse 11, "Therefore, beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul." And so the argument that Peter is making here and the way that it connects back to treasuring or laying our treasures in heaven is to understand that we are simply sojourners and exiles on earth. And what that simply means is that we are only passing through. And there's an element where some of us find ourselves gripping too tightly to the things of this earth. And Jesus later on gives us a warning in Matthew 6 and saying, look, you are not going to be able to tightly hold on to the things here on earth while at the same time having an anticipation and looking forward to heaven in a way that you could if you would not hold on tightly to these things here on earth. And yet for some of us, man, we spend way more time laying up our treasures, investing our time, our energy in things that don't last. All the while forgetting that we are simply sojourners. We are passing through here. This is not our home. I was kind of convicted of this 2 weeks ago when my dad and I, we were out kind of walking around the city, praying for the city of Howell and praying for Anchor. And as we were praying and walking and just spending some time together, there's a house in Howell that I jokingly, but it's not really a joke, I call it my dream home, because it's right on the lake, Thompson Lake, but it's also within walking distance of downtown. And it's kind of like it needs a little bit of work, so I think I can, like, if it ever comes up on the market, I can get it for a little less than what it's really, you know, the market value. So it just hits all the spots. And so I kind of jokingly but kind of seriously go to my dad. As we're praying, we're being very spiritual, and I go, you know, Dad, that's our dream, that's my dream house. And my dad, who is very kind and, you know, very quiet and soft-hearted, he just comes back at me and he goes, oh, okay, yeah, my dream house is in heaven. just cut to the chase, right? And look, it's not bad to go, man, it'd be kind of fun to live in that house. But there's a difference between saying, hey, that'd be kind of great, versus finding ourselves going, man, my hope and my identity is tied to living in this house. Or my hope, my identity is tied to my house. And so if we are to lay up our treasures in heaven, we need to come to a place where we recognize that we are sojourners. And when we recognize that we are sojourners, what begins to happen is we find ourselves spending less money and time and energy and resources on things that don't last, and find ourselves spending and investing more of our time, our energy, our money, our resources on things that have eternal implications. And the second way in which we lay up our treasures in heaven is not only do we recognize that we're sojourners, but we also live as stewards and not owners of our possessions. For some of us, this is pretty hard, right? We recognize that we are stewards and not owners of our possessions. And there's a big difference between the two, isn't there? Because what does a steward do? What a steward does is they take care of something well, but they take care of it well, and what are they? They're very generous with it because they understand that this isn't my own, and so I'm going to take care of it, but I'm also going to not find my hope and identity in it because I don't own it. I'm simply going to steward it, and I'm going to make it available to those around me, and the purpose of having these things is looking at, like, what are the ways that I can use them to point people to Jesus? Whereas what an owner does is they take something and they hoard oftentimes, right? And so we don't share, and so we protect it and we control it. And one of the hardest things about being a steward rather than an owner of our possessions is what? Is the fact that when we're a steward, we can't control. Whereas when we're the owner, we think we can control and we try to control. But if we are to lay up our treasures in heaven, we have to recognize that we are sojourners, that we're not here. This is not our home. And we must live as stewards and not owners of our possession. And the reason that we can do this is, once again, because we are Christ's treasure. If we've trusted Christ as our rescuer, we are Christ's treasure, and Christ is for us, so that we do not have to live for ourselves. Because at the root of treasuring, laying up our treasures here on earth, is the drive that I must live for myself. So I want to come back to the question that we asked earlier, which is, where are your treasures? Where are your affections pointed? Where are you investing your energy? Where are you spending your time? Where is your money going? Where are your treasures? Are your treasures in temporary things, or are your treasures in heaven? Matthew chapter 6, verse 21 at the end here gives us a sobering warning for those of us who would claim to follow Jesus. It says this: "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Then later in verse 24, Jesus also says, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money," or that word could also be translated as possessions. And the warning here isn't for us to go, "I need to try harder." The warning here is for us to have a mirror to look in our life, to be able to see, hey, it is, even though I think that I'm putting my treasures in heaven, am I actually putting my treasures here on earth? And if we find that, man, our main satisfaction is coming from things that belong to this earth, then either we have not truly trusted Christ as our rescuer and Lord, and therefore have not seen how much better Christ is than any treasure here on earth, or we need to repent of our belief that we can meet our own soul-satisfying desires. Because at the end of the day, if Christ is for us, we do not need to be for ourselves. And so to be a follower of Christ, that cost is actually pretty high, isn't it? Because to be a follower of Christ, it means that we're called to be vulnerable to each other so that we can bear each other's burdens. We're called to sacrifice our time and our energy to point our neighbors to Jesus. It calls us to be generous with our money, to anchor to our local church so that the people in our community are pointed to Christ. Those are high calls for us. For us to be able to do that, it means that sacrifices need to be made in our lives. But the cost of following Christ is worth it, isn't it? Because we are following the one who so treasured us that he gave his own life up for us. Because we are following the one who is preparing a place for us, who Hebrews 11 says, whose foundations and pillars are built by God. We are following Christ, and it is worth it in spite of the cost being high, because we are following Christ, who was what? Rejected by God the Father, so that we might be adopted into God's family. Jesus might be our big brother, high priest, and king. And so my encouragement for us as a church is that we would grow in our generosity. That we would grow in our generosity in terms of the way that we give money, in terms of the way that we serve, in terms of the way that we love those around us. But I also want to warn you, do not pursue these things simply because it's the right thing to do. Because if you do that, what will happen is that you will simply find that resentment will begin to creep up in you, because you'll begin to compare yourself with others, going, hey, they're not serving as much as I am, they're not giving as much as I am, or they're not, you know, opening their home up as much as I am. No, you cannot do this by your own effort. Instead, what I encourage you to do is, if you're struggling, you look at your life and you go, man, I am laying up my treasures here on earth rather than laying up my treasures in heaven. The first place that I want you to go to, the first that I want you to do, is to come back to and rest in the fact that, spend time meditating on the fact that because Christ is for you, and because Christ, it says, did not hold anything back from you. Because Christ gave up his life for you, you do not need to live for yourself. and allow that reality to just kind of permeate in your life. And then, as that happens, as that truth kind of drops from your head to your heart, then what you'll find is that you'll begin to grow in generosity with your money. You begin to grow in generosity with your serving. You begin to grow in your generosity with loving others. And then you'll be able to lay up your treasures in heaven and walk in obedience that Jesus calls us to. All the while understanding and being driven by and rooted in that, man, I am doing this not so that Jesus is proud of me or so that he accepts me more, but I'm doing this because Jesus has accepted me, because Jesus treasured me. I'm living this way because Christ is for me. And I can guarantee you that as that takes place in your life, years and years from now, a time will come when we as a church will be worshiping Jesus with all the churches of all times. And in that moment, it won't matter what car you drove to church today. In that moment, it will not matter what type of projects you got done on your house. And I'm preaching to myself on that one. In that moment, it will not matter the moments where you felt embarrassed, where I felt embarrassed. In that moment, all that will matter is the fact that I am joyfully celebrating and worshiping Jesus. And how awesome would it be that as we're worshiping as a church, we can look around and go, man, God didn't need us. He didn't need my money. He didn't need my time. He didn't need my energy, my resources. But God used my money, my time, my energy, my resources to call people to himself so that we're worshiping together. And my eternal investment is paying out through the fact that my neighbor, my coworker, my family member is worshiping Jesus with me. That's what it's about. And that's why we want to be generous. That's why we want to lay up our treasures in heaven. So may we be a church that, man, looks forward to heaven and looks back to Jesus, understanding that because Christ is for us, we do not need to live for ourselves.